Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Donnie Cox on behalf of the appellants and plaintiffs in this action. Your Honor, this is a judicial deception case as well, but I think the deception is pretty clear, and this is an allegation made in a pleading, opening pleading, that the social workers in this case represented to the court that the parents either were not available or did not wish to have their kids examined, and more importantly, that even if they were examined, they didn't want to be present for that exam, and or that they couldn't find them. And all of those statements were false. Our clients never heard about that at any point.
It's not actually a fact-finding. It seems to me to be a very peculiar. It's a form document, and one would think that the judge is supposed to say, which is so. They're sort of mutually exclusive, so I don't see how they can be a fact-finding.
Well, Your Honor, as far as you mean the fact about whether the social workers gave them this,
or they weren't available, or they couldn't find them, they're not just cumulative things. They're mutually exclusive things, and nobody ever determined which they were.
Correct. Well, nothing in the order is true. And I'd start with the fact that the order says the County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency has made reasonable efforts. Somebody had to tell the court that the Health and Human Services Agency made that representation. I mean, so they had to tell the court that. It wasn't something the court just made up out of thin air.
All right, counsel, is there a detention report that's actually in the record itself?
I believe that there is, Your Honor. I'm not absolutely positive. You're talking about the detention report itself that was filed with the time of the detention. Yes, there is, Your Honor. And I don't have.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I don't have the EOR in front of me, but there is a detention report in the record. It also, that detention report is absolutely silent on the issue of the physical exam of the children.
This would be a report prepared by Lisk and Jemison.
Yes, Your Honor. And let me just say from the outset that you're absolutely correct. Lisk and Jemison wrote that report and signed it. Lisk and Jemison were the only social workers assigned to this case. Lisk and Jemison were the only social workers communicating with the court. Lisk and Jemison were the only
What does the record say, or what does the complaint allege about what kind of application was submitted to the court by whom to get the medical exam order?
There is no application that we can find, Your Honor. Keeping in mind,
the question is, what's the allegation in the complaint?
The allegation is that. The social workers either represented orally or in writing to the court that the things that you see in this order, they had to do that. And if that's the case, and it had to be the case, then...
I read it, this is what it says. At some time before or after March 21st, 2016 detention hearing, Lisk, Jemison, and or Doe's 1 through 15, one question is, does that matter, submitted a request that the court signed an order authorizing medical examination, and the order, and then it quotes the order, and at the time it submitted the request, defendants Lick, Jemison, and Doe's 1 through 50 knew that the information they provided was false. They knew
correct.
That no one had been made. That's what it says.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is the allegation. And keeping in mind that this is the opening salvo in this case, the only documents that we have so far are the documents that we got from the juvenile court, that through an 827 request through the Welfare Institution Code Section 827. We haven't taken any depositions yet in this case. We don't have any other documents other than the documents that we've referenced in the complaint. And, you know, if I could for just a second, you know, I as we were getting preparing for oral argument, I realized that, first of all, this is the Second Amended complaint, but we really only had one ruling from the court before the ruling dismissing the case without leave to amend. And in that first ruling, the court seemed to focus, the district court seemed to focus a lot on Rucker-Feldman. And so we went through the explanation of why Rucker-Feldman didn't apply. We're not actually challenging the court. We're challenging the deception of the court, similar to the prior case where the allegation is that the court issued an order that was deceptive and through deception.
So basically, to understand you correctly, you're saying you're at the complaint stage.
Correct, Your Honor.
The question is whether on its face the complaint adequately alleges judicial deception.
Correct, Your Honor. And if I could,
just to amend that, judicial deception by these two people.
Correct, Your Honor. So, you know, earlier...
The contrary that I can think of is that it says and/or does 1 through 50.
Right, Your Honor. And, you know, we actually thought about that when we were getting ready for oral argument, and we talked about the reason we did that. We know that Lisk and Jameson were the only two social workers on this case that were assigned to the case. We know, and we didn't say that specifically in the complaint, at paragraph 20 of the complaint, we started through 24. We list all of the obligations that they had, but we probably should have started that with, and Lisk and Jameson were the only two people on this case that could have made any representations to the court. But the reason we added the and or does 1 through 50 is that it's possible that Lisk and Jameson had a conversation with another social worker who then told the court that. But that doesn't really matter, because if Lisk and Jameson told those other social workers to tell the court that that these parents, you know, either weren't available or didn't want to have their kids examined, and didn't want to be present, then there is a culpable is the social worker who told the.
Would they still be culpable if some you know Doe had the conversations and relayed false information to them, which they then repeated but didn't have any participation in the falsity?
Well, Your Honor, there's no way that anybody else would have done that, because the answer is probably yes, but the problem with that is nobody else had any conversations with these social workers or with the parents other than these two social workers. They, from the 18th of March to the 22nd of March, when the physical exam took place, there were no other social workers involved in this case.
So what I hear you saying is that there are things you could add to the complaint.
Yes, Your Honor.
The inference stronger that they did.
Yes, Your Honor. I think we certainly could amend the complaint to add the fact that Lisk and Jemison were the only two social workers on this case, and were the only two social workers.
The district court held, right, that the complaint wasn't adequate in alleging that these were the responsible people. I mean, that's the essence of what was ultimately held. Is that right?
Right, Your Honor. What the court held was that they couldn't infer from the complaint. The court could infer from the complaint that these were the only two social workers that could have made these representations. We can certainly, because they said that there were no facts. Well, I've just listed a few of the facts. They were the only people filing documents. They were the only people that were were having conversations with the court. Lisk was the only social worker at the detention hearing. And the detention hearing, in the order of the detention hearing, there's no mention of a physical exam. Our clients, you know, there's a couple of other issues that were raised. Well, you know, the court sent out a notice that the exams were going to take place after the court signed the order. But, you know, counsel has, you know, acknowledged that, you know, that they have 3 days to do that. By the time they would have gotten that order, the exams would have taken place. And there was no way to appeal that, because you can't unexamine the children. The exam took place without a court order, without exigent circumstance, without our clients having an opportunity to discuss the matter with the court, and just as importantly, not having the ability to be present. So that's it. But we could certainly add, you know, much more in the way of context to that for the court if given the chance to amend. As far as the issue of the Manel,
well, with respect to giving the chance to amend, the district court has actually rejected efforts to amend, has it not?
It has, Your Honor, and we think that that under these circumstances is an abuse of discretion, mainly because we could have added this court has said on numerous occasions leave to amend it should be granted if it appears at all possible that the plaintiff can correct the defect. And the defect here is that the court said that there weren't enough facts for the court to say that these particular social workers were the ones who gave this misinformation to the court. And I think that
would you agree that the district court did not analyze this case in terms of judicial deception?
It found
a constitutional violation, but did not address judicial deception. Do you agree with that?
I'm not sure I agree, Your Honor. I think that they said that they didn't know. She couldn't tell whether there was judicial deception. She just said that there weren't enough facts to determine whether or not Lisk and Jemison were the ones who deceived the court. I mean, I don't think there's any question that parents had a right to have a due process hearing if the court was going to order the examination. I don't think there's any question they had a right to be present absent an order from the court saying they couldn't be, which takes me to the issue of the Monell claim. And again, I think we can correct any defect in the claim by adding those pertinent facts. And this court has said time and time again that we should be allowed to do that. With regard to the Monell claim, I think that it's pretty clear if you look at the policies and practices that were put into evidence in the district court. They have a policy the county does of asking parents to sign these authorizations to allow for the examinations. And part of that is, and you know they have it. They say, and if there is an exam, do you want to be present? And we'll try to make it present. There is no such policy or no such. Provision for if a court ordered an examination. So for instance, in this case, when the court ordered the examination on the 22nd, on the 21st, the exam was on the 22nd. The social workers were in the courtroom. The list was in the courtroom with the parents and didn't bother to tell the parents that...
The policy seems to be that there is this form. Policy must be to get the court to approve the form.
Well, it may be the policy to get them.
Since the focus is on judicial deception, unless you say there's a focus that the policy is to lie to the court about the issues in the form. Do you have any evidence of that? The policy to lie to the court?
Your Honor, I apologize. I have my earphones in and I'm still.
I don't know why that's a problem, but because I haven't. We'll see. But anyway, is there a policy? Did you allege there's a policy of lying to the court?
What we alleged, Your Honor, was that they used the fact that they never believe that parents have a right to be present at these exams, and they don't believe that the exams themselves.
Well, they now have a policy that they do have a right, and they have.
Well, they
to implement it. And one of the ways of implementing this is this to get a court order.
Oops,
sorry.
That's okay.
I apologize at you, and that's why I have it.
That's okay, anyway, no problem.
And one of the ways that they say that they're doing this is by getting the court to make these findings. So unless you, since your claim is a judicial deception claim in order to do a Rooker-Feldman, unless you have a policy of lying to the court, you don't have a relevant policy, do you?
Well, Your Honor, it's really not a policy as much as a practice and custom. And, you know, their practice and custom in state...
Anybody else ever lied before?
Your Honor, as far as doing the physical exams, the practice and custom of doing physical exams without parental consent is the policy and practice issue here. It's not really the judicial deception issue. The problem that the county... I'm sorry. It's the custom and practice...
Don't you have a Rooker-Feldman problem?
No, Your Honor. No, there's no Rooker-Feldman problem here. We're not challenging the policy of we're not challenging the court's order for the physical exam. We're challenging the fact, just like in the last case, We're challenging the fact that they used deception to get this particular order. What they did was they told the court all of the things that were in what was ultimately signed by the court. And that's the allegation. And remember, we're still at the pleading stage here. I mean, we've made these allegations, and the allegations are supposed to be taken as true. So our position has always been, and the district court found that Rucker-Feldman didn't apply. I mean, they did find that Rucker-Feldman did not apply here. So I think that we didn't spend a lot of time on that in the briefing, because it really, we had spent a lot of time on that in the district court, and the district court agreed with us ultimately after with the second.
Okay, time is over. So thank you very much, and we'll give you a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Michaelowski.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Jeff Michaelowski for the County of San Diego, and for the individual social worker defendants, Benita Jimison and Jennifer Lisk. I'd like to begin by addressing what the second amended complaint actually says about deception, because there was some argument just now in the briefs that claims that my clients, and specifically the two social worker defendants, made misrepresentations to the court. And if that were true, that would obviously be very serious, but that's just not what the complaints actually say. And I think it's important that we be very precise about what has been alleged. Plaintiffs do allege that the county representatives asked the court to sign a form order. County representatives, not Jimison and Lisk. It was Jimison, Lisk, or Does, and or Does 1 through 50. They also allege that they were aware that the form included factual findings that were not accurate, and they allege that the court went ahead and signed that form order. But there's nothing here about any affirmative misrepresentation.
Well, why isn't it a reasonable, plausible inference from those allegations that when the court makes findings that are not true, and it does so based on the application and representations of the persons who requested it, that those persons didn't give the court truthful information? Why is that not a plausible inference?
Well, Your Honor, there's two issues. And the first is that the allegation is as to Lisk, Jimison, and or Does 1 through 50.
Well, now, but he said that he could amend the complaint to say there was no one else involved. So it's just those two. They were the only ones assigned to the case. So it's them. He's essentially said he would amend to make that allegation. So why can't we infer that one of them or both of them made false representations in the court that caused it to make findings that are untrue?
Well, I think he would have problems making that amendment because he previously alleged a widespread civil conspiracy within the county to deprive these individuals of their constitutional rights. He's abandoned that claim. He's no longer...
Somebody implements the conspiracy, and if these two people did this thing, then they did it. I don't understand what the conspiracy has to do with it.
Well, Your Honor, the plaintiff has an obligation to have allegations that are specific to the individuals, and I think there are reasons in this case to hold plaintiff to that standard. First of all, it's the ordinary standard.
I mean, first of all, usually when does are there, they're kind of throwaways, but maybe something's going to show up. But second of all, he says he can explain why he can strengthen the inference that it was Jimison. So why would he be able to do that?
He has had the opportunity to do that. In this case, we're actually further along in the investigation than we would be in almost any other case, because plaintiff has received records from the juvenile court. Plaintiff has received the county's agency's files. It's received the Polinsky's Chilton Center's files. The authorizations for release of those records are in the excerpts of record. So they already have a lot of the key files, including the juvenile court file, and they haven't been able to identify any misrepresentation. And really importantly, they could have done more below.
Let's say we took out and or it goes 1 through 50. We took that out. It says that they, I mean, I don't even see why, how you can say that this isn't, that there isn't any inference one needs to make. They submitted a request that the court order sign an order quote order, and the order states in pertinent part, which I understand to mean that they submitted this piece of paper that says the following, which is a representation that one of these facts is true, and they asked the judge to sign it. So why didn't they make, why isn't the order itself the representations?
It could be, Your Honor. If we...
says that, and it seems to be true that if you give a judge an order that says sign this, you're telling him that what's in it is true.
Not necessarily, Your Honor, and I think ties in with the qualified immunity analysis, because if a social worker submitted a knowingly false statement to the court, especially one signed under penalty of perjury, which these documents are not, that, I think, would be a violation of clearly established law.
Right. But we have... At the time they submitted the request for the above order, defendants Lick, Jameson, Lehaf for the moment, Doe's 1 through 50, knew that the information they had provided the court was false. So I don't know what could be more specific than that. They know that no effort had been made. They know that they were never told. They knew X, Y, and Z. Completely.
Again, we have the problem with the Doe's.
All right, leave out the problem with the Doe's for now.
Okay, we disregard the Doe's. We also have a problem with qualified immunity, and then we also have a problem with...
What's the problem with qualified immunity? The cases say specifically that you, if you lie to the court to get an order to remove a child, you've got a problem.
The qualified immunity cases aren't so clean-cut. If there's a knowingly false perjured statement to the court, yes, that's clearly established, certainly. But what the qualified immunity cases also teach us is that... a negligent submission, a mistake, an oversight. These things are not sufficient to defeat qualified immunity. And I point the court to the decision in this court's decision in Jessup.
Can I ask you again, focus, asking to return to the posture of this litigation? We're at the complaint stage. Now you're making arguments as to what the facts ultimately might reveal, and you may be correct. But the question now is really, isn't it, whether the complaint survives a challenge, a 12b6 challenge, whether there is enough in the complaint to allege judicial deception in violation of rights. Isn't that the case?
Yes, I think that's a fair framing. I'd add that the obligation falls on the plaintiff. He has the burden of plausibly alleging that judicial deception, and it has to be judicial deception by these particular defendants, not by the institutions.
Yeah.
And I want to go back to what I think is a really
before you do that, can I just ask a question about the state of the record that we have? Record, is there actually a detention report or any documents that have been submitted by Jemison and Lisk, to your knowledge?
No. My colleague that there is no detention report included in the record. He can correct me if I'm mistaken on that, but my understanding, there is none. My understanding is that it was nonetheless not included in the record. We have memorialization of the proceedings that went on in the juvenile court. Those are annotations and notes by the judges, and those don't reveal any sort of misrepresentation.
Do you know how this application, how this order was obtained?
The record is essentially silent on that. We have plaintiff's allegations. What we have is some county representative provided this proposed order. Court signed.
Was it done in open court? Was it done ex parte?
The record is silent on that. But I think what
establishes that it was not done in open court.
Pardon?
I thought the record establishes that it was not done in open court. Or at least it was not done in court when the parents were there. I mean, the record is in the complaint.
Yes, the plaintiff does allege that. And a couple of points that I really want to get back to here. Plaintiff...
Let me just step back for a minute. Isn't this a ridiculous way to conduct litigation? I mean, shouldn't we simply, we have a set of allegations. They're pretty close in. Shouldn't we find out what happened, i.e. go to the summary judgment stage? I understand that Iqbal and Twombly have changed the rules somewhat, but to the degree that we're going to spend 3 years arguing about what's in a complaint instead of actually finding out what happened?
I think this case presents an even stronger reason to affirm the dismissal. And it's because, number one, discovery has already happened. And number two, really importantly, and this is aligned with the Rooker-Feldman problem, which is that plaintiffs could have developed this record further in the state court. They could have filed a motion for reconsideration. They could have taken steps.
It already happened. What was the point of the reconsideration?
Well, they would need to, there's 2 points to the reconsideration, Your Honor. Number one, they need to vacate the order of the state court before they pursue relief in federal court. That's the basic concept of Rooker-Feldman. There's also a special issue here, which is that medical authorization order, it wasn't a one-time authorization of these Polinsky examinations that they're now challenging. It was a very broad authorization for Polinsky to conduct physical, mental, dental, ongoing examinations. So even if, and I agree with plaintiff that the original examination could not be undone, they would still have every incentive to challenge that order in the state court proceedings, and they chose not to. And I think this is very, very important. They actively litigated in the state court. They challenged the removal of the child all the way through a final determination, months and months of litigation, represented by counsel. The child was represented by separate counsel. So if they wanted to mount a challenge to the medical authorization, they could have done so in the state court. They also took it to the Fourth District Court of Appeals and took it all the way to a merits determination. So this is a case where plaintiffs not only had the opportunity to address these state issues in state court, they addressed other issues but declined to address the ones that they're now bringing to the federal district court and now this court in the first instance. So that really violates.
On appeal, I just want to ask about the record. You're not asking for judicial notice or challenging the district court's refusal to exhibit this, to consider this Exhibit K?
We are not challenging the district court's determination with respect to Exhibit K.
What did you claim about that document below as to why you sought it? And it, if I'm reading it correctly, it seems to say mom consented. I don't know what any of this means.
That's correct. The document, which plaintiff challenges unauthenticated, did reflect a communication. It appears to reflect a communication between the social worker and the district court. I believe it denied judicial notice as moot, and we're not challenging that on appeal, so we're not relying on that document here.
Okay.
I see that my time is short, and I'd like to turn to the Monell claim, which seems to me to be relatively straightforward, because what plaintiff is challenging here is not any policy of the county. What they're really claiming is that the individual social workers violated county policy. That's sort of the conceptual inverse of a Monell claim. It just doesn't fit. There's no allegation of any prior violations. There's no factual allegations regarding any failure to train, anything like that. So the Monell claim is just a really poor fit in this case. Qualified immunity is also, the district court found qualified immunity, and I think that was correct. And again, I think I actually addressed this on the front end, which is that plaintiff needs to find a case addressing very closely similar facts, and given this gap in their factual allegations, we presented a proposed order, the judge signed it. That's very different than in cases.
And they knew that what was in it wasn't true. The rest of the complaint says that they knew that that the statements in the proposed order are not true.
Yes, accepting plaintiff's allegations as true as we must. They would have to.
What's the gap between this and? I think there has to be a case where this particular order or something just like it was involved.
It doesn't have to be exact, Your Honor. But it has to be enough to put any reasonable social worker on notice.
There's a reasonable social worker knew that he was telling the court that X, Y, and Z happened by presenting an order and asking the judge to sign it, and that X, Y, and Z were not true. What else would he have to know that it wasn't a judicial deception constitutional problem?
Because we know that qualified immunity jurisprudence allows mistakes, inadvertence, even negligence, and even bad.
I don't know what more the individual social workers would have to know if the complaint were true, to know that they were violating constitutional rights. What competent social worker wouldn't know that if the facts alleged were true?
I think a competent social worker would agree with that. That's established. However, we have to look at what plaintiffs actually alleged. Again, it's not these two particular social workers, it's these two or 50 others. And there's also no...
But that's a different point. But if, in fact, they were the ones who did this, would they be entitled to qualified immunity?
If they did it intentionally, I think that would...
Or with reckless disregard?
Yes, I think that gets us into the territory. But there's no allegation of intent or recklessness there. There's...
They knew this wasn't true. Because they knew it wasn't true. That they gave this judge this document which made certain representations.
There's no allegation that negates negligence, inadvertence, a mistake. And these
why is it knowledge negating the inadvertence and mistake if they knew it?
I think that knowledge of something is totally consistent with an honest mistake, inadvertence, neglect, but that's not sufficient to deprive them of qualified immunity.
So if you know a fact and you represent the opposite, that could be inadvertent?
I think it would fall under the qualified immunity line of cases that say that government officials get breathing room to make mistakes. And submission of a form, a one-page form order that has some detail in it, it's entirely consistent with plaintiff's allegations. It's probably more plausible that the social workers submitted a form to the court without intentionally deceiving anyone. I see that I'm over my time, but...
So thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be very brief, I promise. First of all, we have not alleged in this case that there were mistakes by the social worker. We allege that what they did, that what they gave to the court was false. We could also add, with reckless disregard, as pointed out by Judge Katzman in our amended complaint. We have said... all along that the social workers, that our clients had no knowledge of either the physical exam that happened at Polinsky or, for that matter, even the order itself until this case was complete. We didn't get the juvenile court records, and our clients didn't have the juvenile court record, and they never got an order signed by the judge in this case. We didn't get that until we got some records from the juvenile court as a result of this lawsuit. So that was the first time that we were even aware that that our clients had there was an order signed by a court. So it's kind of beyond comprehension that the allegation would be, well, maybe it was a mistake. That's not what we've alleged, and right now we're at the pleading stage, and we should we can certainly tighten up the complaint. But I think even without that, I think that as you said, Judge Brisson, that we have alleged that these social workers lied. And that should be enough, but we can certainly amend the complaint and make it tighter.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you both for your useful arguments. We will submit the case versus County of San Diego, and we are in recess. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.